Welcome once again to EWTN's Bookmark. I'm Doug Keck, your host, our guest author, joining us from Grove City, Pennsylvania, Paul Kengor, PhD, the book, The Worst of Indignities, The Catholic Church on Slavery, published by Emmaus Road Publishing, naturally available through our EWTN religious catalog, EWTNRC.com for all things Catholic. Welcome, Paul Kengor, once more to Bookmark.
Yeah, thanks, Doug. It's good to be back. And I've not only been a guest a few times now, but I'm a fan of the show. So it's good to be back on. Thank
you. Absolutely. And we're a fan of your work as well, especially your book on Marx and the Devil. And of course, here's an interesting one, a little less political, but interesting. The Catholic Church on Slavery. Is that an issue that we need to address that hasn't been addressed in your mind?
Yeah, unfortunately it is. And in fact, I think it's becoming even more of an issue because the church has been victimized by some of the same sort of, you know, for lack of a better term, kind of CRT, critical race theory element that's out there right now. And I mean, you know, there are these various clubs that are used to beat the Catholic Church, right? The Crusades, the Inquisition, you name it. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, if you Google around right now, Doug, and you know, people can do this and they'll see right away, and I quote some examples in the book. I mean, you're gonna find people out there, scholars who are claiming things like, well, you know, the Catholic Church didn't get around to condemning slavery until, and they'll come up with late 1800s. I mean, some people even claim Vatican II, of all things, right? And you'll hear claims that, well, they might have condemned slavery, but you know, not the transatlantic slave trade. And this is something that I knew as a historian generally, and you know, not an expert at that point, and you know, not until I really dug into this on the Catholic Church and slavery. I just knew that wasn't true, and I had done a piece for Crisis Magazine in the really, you know, kind of wild summer of 2020, when there were BLM protests going on and everything, and the 1619 Project was kind of ramping up. And I wrote a piece on how the Catholic Church was really the first abolitionists. I mean, the church was condemning slavery, you know, way, 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 way before any other country, any other institution. I mean, you know, 400 years before Wilberforce in Britain, 430 years before Lincoln in the Civil War. I know we're going to talk about all this, but so I wrote a piece on that for Crisis Magazine, and my old friend Scott Hahn, who's a good friend of this show on EWTN, contacted me. He, you know, he runs Emmaus Road Publishing, and he said you need to write a book on this.
Right.
And I said, well, I'm already working on two or three different books, and he said, but you need to, you need to. So he gave me the time to do it, and I did the research, and this is it.
Okay, you write in the preface that slavery is as old as human history itself, and then you mentioned it already, the transatlantic slave trade, which has largely become the image of slavery in the modern mind, and that's the one that relates to the United States, North and South America. But when you start to look into the numbers in relation to how many went to North America, how many actually went to South America, let alone the other aspects of slavery that was going on at the same time in Africa, it really changes your understanding, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. I mean, you're talking, so the Atlantic, the transatlantic slave trade started about 1444, goes on for about 400 years, and altogether, man, 10 to 20 million slaves altogether. Mm-hmm. And of those numbers, okay, less than 5%, okay, less than 5% went to North America. All right, and I mean, the Spanish were terrible, Portugal was terrible, the Dutch, the biggest slaving country, all right. And I'd put this aside from the greatest slaving religion, which we could talk about, which was Islam, all right. But the biggest slave country was Brazil. Brazil. And Brazil didn't get around to ending slavery until about 1888, all right? And I personally never been to Brazil, but I've seen pictures, and, you know, they're not exactly like, you know, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, white Northern Europeans, all right? So I don't want to play this racial ethnic game, but the point is, right, the point is, as I make throughout the book, that what really makes slavery so evil, so horrific is that it's not just the United States, right? We in America think of it as this thing almost unique to America, America's original sin, as black people from Africa in America, and that's all horrific, and we fought a civil war over it, and praise God that it ended, mm-hmm. right? Slavery goes mm-hmm. back, according to scholars, 8,000, 10,000 years. I mean, this is a Christian network, right? Mm. Open your Bibles,
right.
Go to the Old Testament, the Jewish people, right? I mean, they were being enslaved always. If you go back to, some scholars estimate that slavery began in ancient Mesopotamia, all right? Mm. Go to the book of Genesis, and it describes the confluence of the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, right. which is where ancient Mesopotamia was, modern day Iraq, and they flow in, according to to Genesis, into a little place called the Garden of Eden, all right? So you could begin the slavery story shortly after that. This has been a scourge and evil against all of humanity and empires and countries going back thousands of years.
Well, it very much fits into the kind of the Darwinist idea of the, the stronger subjugating the weaker as a natural course of the way the world works, whether that's in nature, we see it obviously in the animal kingdom, or certainly with that idea of slavery. So for people to see that as something that was perfectly fine. In the beginning, in the preface, you have a quote here. It says, slavery was a worldwide institution for thousands of years, notes the brilliant scholar Thomas Sowell, who is fantastic. If people don't know who he is, you got to go on YouTube and watch his videos and speak. He's fantastic. A black American. People of every race and color were enslaved and enslaved others. White people were still being bought and sold as slaves in the Ottoman Empire decades after the American blacks were freed after the Civil War. And you talk about the one civilization to step forward and fight to end all of the slavery was Western civilization, which at the same time is the one taking the biggest hit over it.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. Western Judeo-Christian civilization, and led by churches, by Christians, in the United States by Protestant Christians, and Western Europe by Catholics, and throughout Europe by the Catholic Church going back hundreds of years. In fact, as I know in the book, I mean, you could go back to the 300s, the 400s, the 500s, early church councils. St. Patrick was a slave, mm-hmm. okay? I mean, on and on and on. And Thomas Sowell also points out, Doug, that what makes America so unique, again, about slavery is that not only did were we one of the first nations to abolish it, but we abolished it through the bloodiest war in the history of our country. Mm-hmm. Now, the Civil War, where at least 600,000 boys died, and these are by and large white boys fighting white boys mm-hmm. over the institution of slavery, right? With all these northern boys dying to try to stop slavery. 600,000, we think today it might even be as high as 700,000. By the way, that's out of a population mm-hmm. of about 20 million people
right.
in the 1860s, okay? So 600,000, 700,000. That was more than the combined deaths for America in all other wars in the history of the country. Add up World War I, mm-hmm. World War II, Korean War, 50,000 dead, Vietnam War, 50,000 dead, Gulf War, Persian Gulf Crisis, all of them. And then you get to close to the number of people killed in the American Civil War. Mm-hmm. So that's really what's unique about us, mm-hmm. commendable about us. And people also want to beat up the founders.
Right.
But as Lincoln said, In my home state of Pennsylvania, in Gettysburg, in 1863, he said, 87 years ago, that's 87 years, that takes you back to July 4, 1776, right. He said, our founders put forth the proposition that all men are created equal. Now, the founders at the time mm-hmm. couldn't pull off abolishing slavery. I mean, they would have never had the Revolutionary War. They wouldn't have had 13 United Colonies. But they had put in place the principle that all men are created equal, right, by their
right.
creator. So they put in place the ideals that it would take somebody like a Lincoln later, and again, through a horrible civil war that Lincoln himself gave his life over, mm-hmm. To abolish it in the United
right.
States.
Right, and of course, rather than the 1619 project, the projection about when we started and what it was based on. You also make the point here, and this is really important for people to understand, certain places in recent times, like pockets of Africa, has continued usually without a peep, meaning slavery. going on, and protests from Western liberals who instead prefer to turn all criticism on the West and even on Christendom. And it seems like the other thing they totally ignore is the genocide that's going on in Nigeria, or the, you know, the Islamic attacks on Christians throughout Africa, where even in the last Christmas, you had hundreds of people being murdered, basically, if they're either being kidnapped or they're being killed in parts of Africa, and we never hear anything about it.
No, in fact, people could Google U.S. State Department report on modern slavery in the Sudan and
right.
read about what's been going
and
on.
Those
there
are Christians who are being, right, as you talk about
right.
in the
they're,
book.
Yeah, they're usually black African Christians being captured and enslaved by black African Muslims. All right, something that's been going on there for back to about the year, the sixth century, back to the life of Muhammad. Muhammad was a warlord. Mm-hmm. And Muhammad had slaves, lots of slaves. But I also quote in the book a number of black American newspapers mm-hmm. in the 1990s, black journalists who were really outraged when they found out what was going on in Sudan, mm-hmm. Mauritania, a number of other different states in Northern Africa. And they said, you know, this is a horror show. Mm-hmm. I mean, we thought slavery was over. I mean, right. what's happening here? And they try to get groups like the Congressional Black Caucus, Jesse Jackson, Louis Farrakhan of the Nation of Islam, mm-hmm. and others to pay attention to this. I mean, there were groups. ABC sent an entire news crew down there. They actually purchased a couple slaves right. to set them free.
Right.
So yeah, that's going right. on today, and that is. That's traditional slavery right. that they're engaging
let
in.
Alone the human trafficking that we've gotten has
right.
raised its head, and we saw what was going on as well. I thought this was really interesting. You bring up here the story of John Brown and his bloody raid at Harper's Ferry helped to set the stage for the Civil War. Brown was so militant in his cause that some have dubbed him America's first terrorist, a terrorist battling slavery. I always thought that was interesting because in the movie Santa Fe Trail, clearly John Brown is portrayed as a wild man, and obviously what he did wasn't right, but as if fighting against slavery made him like crazy, and the fact is that the people he was freeing actually were just as happy to go back to where they came from. So this was here in the 1940s perspective that you would get even on somebody like John Brown, who really at the core was an abolitionist.
Yeah, I love the fact that you mentioned that movie. As you know, I'm a Reagan biographer.
Mm-hmm.
So, folks, watch Santa Fe Trail.
Yeah, he was in it, right. Played Custer, right.
right.
He was
that's
Custer.
Right, that's right.
Right.
Ronald Reagan, Errol Flynn, and Olivia de Havilland, right,
that's
who
right.
was in Gone.
And Raymond Massey, who played Lincoln, played John Brown.
So, that's right, yeah. Right. Olivia de Havilland was in Gone with the Wind. So, that's quite a movie. And mm-hmm. and John Brown was inspired by watching the murder, the killing of a pastor, an abolitionist named Elijah Lovejoy. And at that point, John Brown said there on the spot, I pledge before my almighty God, right, that I will spend the rest of my life fighting the evil of slavery. And he did it in a really militant, aggressive way mm-hmm. that he was indeed considered one of America's first terrorists.
Right.
Now, you know, he's an example of somebody who was much more militant in the cause.
Right.
Go to the Quakers, go to any number of other American pastors, Protestants in the middle 1800s, they were all against it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, going back to the founders, I'll say this again as a Pennsylvanian, Ben Franklin. Mm-hmm. Ben Franklin's really last sort of public gig organization was the head of the Pennsylvania Society for the Abolition of Slavery. John Adams as well was against it. And as people know, George Washington had slaves. He had 316 slaves at Mount Vernon. Thomas Jefferson had slaves. James Madison did. But this is the key point. They were all in principle against it. And you could find example after example of them stating clearly and unequivocally, acknowledging that they thought that it was wrong. And they even, including Jefferson, they took part in legislation, sponsored legislation, did what they could to stop slavery. By 1800, I mean, Congress, this is 60, 70 years before the Civil War, had already banned the importation of slaves.
Right, right.
At that point. So they were doing what they could. And people would say, well, why didn't Washington and right. Jefferson free their slaves? Well, financially, as they said, the wolf has us by the tail, right? Mm-hmm. The devil has us by the tail. They felt they couldn't personally, financially extricate themselves from it, and it tormented them. You know, Washington, at the time of his death, freed all of his slaves on Mount Vernon mm-hmm. and actually left endowments for all of them. One of the slaves was still collecting on the endowment, I think, into the 1830s. Washington died in 1799. So some of these were pretty generous wow. endowments. But they, they had slaves and it was wrong and they knew it was wrong, but at least they understood that it was wrong and they set in place the principles right. to eventually lead to abolition. The folks, this stuff doesn't happen overnight. Right. I mean, it takes time. It took time.
Well, in principle, these things happen overnight. In reality, it's much different. It's interesting, right. too, because you point out the connection with the Marquis de Lafayette, right, as being the one who really prompted Washington in many ways to try and do something, right?
He did, yeah. There's letters between Washington and Lafayette, Robert Morris, others. And by the way, I should note here, you know, we now, we're Catholic. I'm of Italian ancestry on my mom's side. They are canceling Christopher Columbus, mm-hmm. and they've replaced, you know, they're trying to replace Columbus Day with you know, Indigenous Peoples Day. All right, I talk in the book
right.
about how the five so-called civilized tribes, mm-hmm. the Cherokee, the Choctaw, the Seminoles, right, the others, they all had slaves. Mm-hmm. They had black African slaves. And some of them fought on the side of the Confederacy correct. In the Civil War. And some of them still had slaves after the Civil War. And they were brutal. I mean, they would chop the feet off of a slave to try to keep that slave from getting away. And talk to the black American community mm-hmm. in the United States. There is to this day, there are lawsuits by black American descendants of those slaves against Native American Indian tribes.
Right.
Because of that slavery, right? Now, this is something that doesn't get talked about by, you know, the 1619 Project and white liberals and these folks, but it should.
It's BIPOC, it should. Right? The, the people of color.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're all united together in this kind of, meanwhile, as you point out, the idea that the even the Emancipation Proclamation wasn't extended to the Indian tribes because they were seen as separate entities, and so slavery was allowed to continue, technically, in those Indian reservations.
That's right. And they wanted it, and they wanted slavery to continue. They relied on it, and you don't hear a peep about it
right.
today. I mean, they talk about, look at what's happened to the statue of Junipero Serra mm-hmm. outside the missions that he founded all over California. I mean, the only of those statues that haven't had red paint thrown on them, or the one that I went to at the Santa Barbara mission that was decapitated. Right. By the way, Doug, how do you decapitate a statue? I mean, that takes some work, right? Mm-hmm. The one in Sacramento that was blowtorched and turned down by people hopping up and down in the middle of the night and screaming. I mean, the only ones that have been spared are the ones, including I visit quite often Ventura, California, mm-hmm. which is named for St. Bonaventure. That one was taken down by the town and shipped off to a warehouse before right. they could throw red paint on it. But, if you want to cast stones at Junipero Serra and Columbus, you need to talk to the Seminoles and the right. and the Choctaw and some of these other groups, too. Again, this is not right. unique to white
right.
Americans.
And you talk about, obviously, the Aztecs, the Mayans, et cetera, let alone the slavery and the subjugation of other tribes. I mean, one of the things people are always amazed, they say, oh, gee, the Spanish came in with 600 conquistadors and defeated this unbelievably because they had lots of weapons. No, it's because they had lots of auxiliaries. And those auxiliaries were made up of all the tribes that had been subjugated for all those years by the Aztecs. That's who helped to overthrow the Aztec Empire.
And that was pure savagery. I mean, it's unbelievable the way that human beings were treated by those folks, right? And the one institution that steps forward in the middle of all of this, after 1,000 years of Muslims doing what they did from about the year 500, about the year 600 to the early 1400s, Great Wall of China, right, of all things built by slaves and often
right,
black slaves.
Right. That was interesting. When I started reading about China, I said, okay, they subjugated their, you know, various tribes or whatever, with the warlords or whatever. But the idea that the Arabs were actually bringing black slaves from Africa to China, I had no idea.
They were treated as racial inferiors as well. Mm-hmm. Now, the very word slave, that comes from the word Slavus, the Latin Slavus, which refers to Slavs. Mm-hmm. And now my dad's side of the family, so Kengor actually is a Polish name. Those Slavs, they might well have been slaves at one point to my mom's ancestors in Rome, right? So, Eastern Europeans, they did that. And on my mom's side, my mom's family is from Calabria, Reggio Calabria. That whole area was constantly under threat all the time from Muslim pirates. I mean, it was the Order of Malta, the Knights of Malta, the Siege of Malta, 1583, 1563, Battle of Lepanto.
Right.
If it wasn't for those Christians, the Holy League, the Pope at the time, if they hadn't stepped forward to stop the Muslims in the 1600s, the Muslims could have enslaved the entire coast there of Italy, all the way up to France, all the way up to Spain and Portugal. And again, that would have been whites being taken slave. And I should point out one other date in case Nicole Hannah-Jones and the others focus on the 1619 Project. Mm. A book came out a few years ago, Doug, I think it was 2007. It's called White Cargo. Mm. And I don't think the authors anticipated that the year that they noted in this book would be this relevant. Mm. But they noted that the real start of slavery in America was in 1618. Mm-hmm. And that was when about 300,000 white indentured servants came to America from Britain. And they were not treated typically, usually as harshly as black Africans, but a lot of them were treated with great cruelty, shackled, chained, whipped, scourged, auctioned. So really the first slaves to come here, by and large, were probably white slaves, indentured servants from Britain. And those were white Brits handing over and enslaving white Brits.
Right. That's why they had debtors' prisons and things like that that effectively were doing the same thing. But, you know, it's interesting, too, at a different level. You've got the Barbary pirates, why there was a war there, that whole the halls of Montezuma, the shores of Tripoli.
Yeah.
That's where it came from. And there were a couple of million, I think, as you quote, they estimate, of white Europeans who were held as slaves throughout the Middle East and in Africa.
Enormous numbers. Those were white Europeans, okay, that had been taken slave, usually by Muslims, and they were owned by black Africans in northern Africa. That's exactly right. So again, this is a scourge against everybody.
Right.
And one of the first, you know, papal bull statements, encyclicals, anything that sort of breaks the insanity, Pope Eugene IV, in December 1434, issues Creator Hominum, and then Sicut Dudum in January 1434, or January 1435. And that one was called Against the Enslavement of Black Natives in the Canary Islands. All right. 1435, that's almost exactly 9 years before when scholars date the start of the transatlantic slave trade in 1444. So the one group to come forward in this is the Catholic Church. And these popes say, not only should slavery be illegal and you shouldn't be doing this, but I don't care if you're a prince, you're going to be excommunicated if you don't give up your slaves. And, all right, now think about this, you owe reparations to these people. So the first group to actually call for reparations wasn't African Americans in the United States in the year 20 in California in the 2020s, all right? It was the Catholic Church. And this makes sense, right? Because as Catholics, you go to confession and you admit your sins, right? And what does a priest tell you to do? Make reparation.
Right.
For the sins
some
that
sort
you've
of
committed.
Penance. That,
exactly.
Right. In the closing minutes, I wanted to touch on the fact that the Roman Catholic Church and slavery, the subject is a commendable history, as you said, of opposition to slavery that predates Reformation because different people have different charges about things. But one of the things you alluded to earlier, the vast majority of slaves, let's focus on North and South America, went to, let's say, Brazil. Portugal, obviously, Prince Henry the Navigator, those kind of things, were very heavily involved. Spain, obviously, at some point. So people would look and say, well, these are Catholic countries.
Right.
If the Catholic Church was so against slavery all these years, Paul, how come they were the ones exploiting it, at least on the Christian side?
Yeah, well, actually, I quote in the book, church councils going back to the 500s and 600s. Mm-hmm. So what you have there is not a church that's wrong or a Christian faith that's wrong. What you have there are Christians and Catholics who are wrong, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not the institution, it's not the church. And by the way, people have said, well, you know, the church didn't get around to condemning slavery of blacks until 1800s, Vatican II. No, I just said January 1435, right? Sicut Dudum, against the enslavement of black natives in the Canary Islands. One could argue here, Doug, one could say, wow, well why didn't they condemn slavery of whites earlier, right? Why wasn't the church condemning the enslavement of Jews earlier, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, it was all of humanity mm-hmm. that was being victimized by this. The one institution that comes in mm-hmm. in the middle of all of this and throws all of, you know, human history a giant curveball is the Catholic Church. I quote one of the Muslim Ottomans who's kind of scratching his head saying, I don't understand it. All this moral hand-wringing by you Christians. I mean, you know, you go to a country and you go to war and you conquer it and you take the women as concubine, you take the slaves, and I don't get it. What's right. all this moral dilemma stuff, right?
Right.
The church is the one institution that comes in and changes the course
right.
of history and moral understanding on the issue.
Right. They just viewed it as the spoils of war. We're just out of time. Thank you so much, Paul Kengor, for joining us. The Worst of Indignities, the Catholic Church on Slavery. Very enlightening, published by Emmaus Road Publishing, and naturally available through the EWTN Religious Catalog, EWTNRC.com for all things Catholic. I advise you check this book out and check us out next time right here on Bookmark. Thanks.